This is Johnny Vedmore on today's News Talk TNT.
Hello, my friends. Welcome to the Johnny Vedmore Show on today's News Talk TNT. I'm very glad that you have joined us for another day. Had a really awesome day yesterday with a full lady lineup that blew my mind, and it was a fantastical time. Really happy everybody got involved in the chat. Remember, if you're in the chat, say some stuff. Maybe if you've got a question for the guests I'm speaking to, put a little cue before it so I can note it. I love to get you guys involved always. You're my support team for sure. Who is going to tell you what is happening? When the people who are in charge spend all of their time showing you one side of the story, do you even notice anymore? I'm sure that my audience are pretty switched on to the fact that the establishment are systematically lying to them. But even though we're switched on, we can still be caught out by military-grade psychological operations being enacted on us by our own governments. Think about that. And really do think about that. They literally make you pay towards your own brainwashing, which they use to coerce you into things like the mutilation of children. And then we vote for them to do it some more as well. And we give them power, of course, by our vote. It isn't only the powers that be which need to change their ways. It's obviously us too. We need to become totally resilient to this sort of behavior. And that doesn't mean just letting it slide. It means that we need to become more angry and active, at least in a focused way. We are living within a society driven by trends. If you watch what is trending carefully, then you discover that the establishment co-opt what is popular, and they're then using it against us. That's how they work. They take those you love and they inject them with a spike protein, which will damage or kill. They take those you love and they fill them full of hateful propaganda to sow division. They take those you love and they convince them to hate their own existence. And they make these people shrivel up inside themselves and feel pathetic. This is their world, one built on hatred, self-loathing and fear, and it is the one that we are living in. How many times are you going to look at the propaganda and decide that you should listen to them? Just one more time. It's a pandemic after all. Just one more time. It is a war after all. Just one more time. It is an election year after all. To them, we are the great unwashed masses who are begging them for help. While at the same time, these people are only getting rich at our expense. It is them who should be left to beg. Will your children be safe while Jeremy Farrar sits on the upper echelons of the World Health Organization and plans to use perverted science to experiment upon your children? Will your children be safe while the authorities use confusing gender ideology to brainwash the masses and then use perverted science to mutilate those children? Will your children be safe when their schools and colleges propagate and hyper-normalize these ideologies to completely normalize perverted science, which targets children? Your children grow up being taught by their teachers, their politicians, and the MSM collaborators. And at the moment, many of you hand over control of your children to these people. After a while, you have to ask yourself why you think anything's going to change if you just keep giving the worst in our society another chance to do the same thing over and over again. There is no such thing as gender dysphoria. There is only dysphoria. The gender part of gender dysphoria is interchangeable with anything they use to twist your mind. And nowadays, they're twisting your mind for one reason in particular, for their perverted science. In Ravensbrück concentration camp during the Second World War Nazi scientists committed a range of acts upon the inmates. Some of these criminal acts were indistinguishable from what we see the Western medical establishment commit today. Humans who have gained power, whether by trickery or not, then allow their medical elite to experiment on parts of their population which they see as expendable. How long will it take for us to realize that those in power currently see 6.5 billion humans on Earth as expendable? If we do nothing now, then weird and perverted science will continue to be enacted on us until we are no longer human. Now, there is an event coming up that I talked about yesterday. I want to talk about again, the Weekend of Truth Festival. If you would like to see all of your favorite freedom fighters on one stage across one weekend, then listen up, people. The Weekend Truth Festival will feature speakers such as Katie Hopkins, Katie Shemarani, got it right this time, Dolores Cahill, Matt Letizier, Mark Atwood, David Clues, allegedly Dave Sovereign Pete, and many others. All of this across one weekend on the 3rd, 4th, and 5th of May in Workington near the Lake District in the UK. All you need is to bring a tent, a sleeping bag, and some good vibes, as food stalls, workshops, bushcraft, and amenities will all be provided on site. For more information and to find out how to reserve your place at the festival, please visit weekendtruthfestival.co.uk. But don't hang around, because only a limited number of places are still available. And if you want to find out more about other community events, rallies, marches, festivals, and fundraisers happening near you, then visit our What's On events calendar on the TNT website at tntradio.live. Stay in touch on TNT.
Abroad or at home, this is your news.
By staying silent, we are part of the problem.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Now, people, on Tuesday, British Prime Minister, I say that with quotation marks, Prime Minister Rishi Sunak, controversial plan to implement a lifetime ban on the sale of cigarettes to a select group of individuals, passed its first parliamentary vote, despite dozens of its own lawmakers voting against it. Here with the story, joining me now is TNT News producer Adam Clark. Ruckus, tell us more about this awful news.
This is wild to me. I had to double, triple check and make sure this wasn't some sort of weird, trollish, fake news thing. This is real. This is wild to me. This is quite possibly going to go down in history as the most draconian piece of legislation from any modern government. I don't know. Let's get into this. When we are talking about a select group of individuals who are going to have difficulty purchasing cigarettes, let's explain what that means in case you missed it. This bill would prevent anyone who was born after January 1st, 2009, from being able to purchase tobacco products ever in their entire lifetime. This means children who are currently aged 15 today in quote unquote Generation Alpha will never, ever, 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 ever be able to, at least legally, buy a pack of cigarettes. That's quite a law. This is wild. I think this involves raising the age of tobacco sale by one every single year. I guess the idea is they just want to stop younger people from ever picking up the habits, because it is indeed a bad habit. Smoking kills, I think, something like 85,000 people every year, something like that, if not more. I'm sure it's much more than that. This is wild. Okay, so the bill passed into Parliament, Britain's Parliament, 383 in favor, 67 against. It will progress to the next stage in Parliament, where it can be subject to amendments. The lawmakers, lawmakers were given a so-called free vote on the bill. That means they did not have to vote along party lines. 57 conservatives, however, including Business and Trade Secretary Kemi Badenoch, voted against the plan, and the scale of the rebellion is considered another blow for pretty much apparently unpopular Sunak, who has faced criticism in his own party over issues ranging from climate change to defense policy. This legislation, according to Reuters, is one of Sunak's flagship policies before an election later this year, which opinion polls suggest the opposition Labour Party will win. The name of this is the Tobacco and Vapes Bill. He says that this will tackle, Sunak says, this will tackle, quote, the single biggest entirely preventable cause of ill health, disability, and death, end quote, meaning smoking. Now, the former prime minister, actually both of them, both Liz Truss and Boris Johnson, don't like it. Specifically, former Prime Minister Liz Truss called the government's bill a, quote, virtue signaling piece of legislation, end quote, arising from a desire by the, quote unquote, technocratic establishment to, quote, limit people's freedom, end quote. I can't say that I would disagree with her. Ms. Truss told the Commons, quote, what we're seeing is we're seeing not just on tobacco, but also on sugar, also on alcohol, also on meat. A group of people who want to push an agenda, which is about limiting people's personal freedom. And I think that is fundamentally wrong, end quote. So, here's the other kicker with all of this, Johnny. If they are going to enforce this law, that means every single person who wishes to purchase tobacco or vape products will have to prove their age with an ID. Ah, there's the rub, isn't it, my friend? What say you about all of this insanity?
Extraordinary. I was watching it unfold and just extraordinary. You know, it's quite funny because when you were looking at Rishi Sunak fighting Liz Truss for the leadership once Boris Johnson stood down, you know, that was like there was a cigarette paper indifference between them, you could say. And now it really is. It's actually contains no tobacco on the one side because it's all being banned. And this is banning the people of the future from doing stuff that we will be able to do, but also that we vote in the people who they won't be able to vote in or vote out to get their own say. This is a very clever way to enact laws so that the people at the time say, oh no, that makes sense. That makes sense. It's good. Let's jump on the authoritarian bandwagon and also decide on creating dystopia too. Because now you know, giving people the ability to ban something in the future. And this is like age related. People over a certain age, people born after a certain year won't be able to do something that everybody else will be able to do. And that seems just obscene. It seems Orwellian. It seems like we are entering into a world that we could predict before, that they will slowly get it so that they can ban whatever they want. They can stop us doing whatever they want. That starts off slightly. That starts off by banning things that we will say, yeah, we agree with. Oh, we agree with that ban. We agree with that ban. Oh, wait a minute. No, you're banning us now. Oh, no. Oh, no. We've let the overreach happen. So this is definite overreach. Not only overreach, it's overreach through time. It's time traveling overreach, the possibly the worst type of overreach you can have. So I find it completely and utterly disgraceful. I take it you're still a smoker, are you, Ruckus?
Yeah, I am, unfortunately. So I would be one of those people where if I lived in the UK, all of these younger generations would be staring at me, hating my guts while I'm puffing away on my cigarette. They're like, man, I wish I could get some of that. And I'd be like, well, I wish you could too, buddy, but it's against the law, son. Yeah, this is wild to me. I can't believe they're going to actually ban an entire future generation of people from being able to make it's their right to make a bad mistake, you know? Yeah, granted, yes, it's not good for you. There's a lot to be, you know, we could argue, hey, listen, the cigarette makers are evil. We know that they do advertise and try to hook the younger generations. But I think there's other ways of approaching this problem rather than just outright banning it, Johnny. Could you imagine other things that they might try to ban? They're like, okay, listen, we understand that the internet right now is free and open, but you know, if you're 13 years old now, you know, starting when you're 21, you're not allowed to use the internet. Like, fill in the blank. It doesn't make any sense. And I don't think I've ever heard of any government attempting such a thing in my lifetime.
Yeah, this isn't just a slippery slope. This is a cliff edge. This is all of the way down. If we allow things like this, and you know, and it's amazing that they've had to really use a mental Rubik's cube. They've had to really do some like circles mentally here to be, oh, is this all right? Will people accept this? Oh, people will accept this. Okay, if people will accept this and we push it forward, no doubt that this idea come from one of the many policy institutes in the world, come from out of somewhere like the World Economic Forum or the Aspen Institute as an idea for how to get rid of these things that they don't like. But again, like I say, a young person, someone who's not old enough to vote, being banned and will never be able to vote for whether or not they're allowed to do something when they're older or side with people, you know, that just seems through the looking glass. I have to say that I gave up smoking a couple of years ago, tobacco, that is, but still, the only thing I smoke is still illegal in the UK. So what can you do?
You know, there's always that. I'm curious if there will be a generation of people who will choose to break this law. You know what I mean? Because there's always that. Just because you make something a law doesn't mean something stops all of a sudden, right? It creates an underground black market, and that could lead to other problems as well, Johnny. So that's always something to consider.
Yeah, thanks for bringing us that terribly dystopian news, Ruckus. I'll see you in the second hour, all right?
Yes, sir.
Awesome. You're listening to today's news talk on TNT.
TNT's Patrick Henningsen.
Joe Biden's a bit of an anomaly in that respect. Normally, the incumbent is running a lot stronger going into the second term or the re-election bid. That's not the case with Joe Biden. We see a lot of people fleeing from his support base, even from his own party, which is unusual. And there's a lot of good reason for that on the foreign policy side, which we'll be discussing throughout this program, but also domestically as well. They haven't been able to tackle inflation in the United States, and that's a big problem. So this isn't, voters they're not caring anymore about COVID. They don't care anymore about vaccine mandates. As we've said before, this mainly is going to be, it's going to come down to being three things: gas, groceries, and World War III.
Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk, TNT.
Sometimes a car comes along that changes everything, with innovations never thought possible and features that make you wonder, how did people survive without this? This is that time. And this is their car. This is the world's first VWB. Equipped with transparent doors to eliminate reasonable suspicion, whatever that means. A 10-2 steering wheel that keeps hands visible at all times. We remove the glove box so there's no confusion about what the driver is reaching for. With a touch of a button, the ultrasonic biometric scanner displays the license and registration of the driver to ensure contactless exchange of information. With no trunk, nothing can be concealed, so therefore, there is nothing to search and seize. To ensure you will never be mistaken for breaking the speed limit, we've installed limited edition airless tires, and we remove the engine because, honestly, why risk it? DWB, the first vehicle of its kind, where the safety feature is the car itself.
I have a feeling these are the suspects in question. The two occupants look like the people involved in the armed robbery. I'm approaching the vehicle. Request backup. The driver matches the description because of a wide-set nose.
Today's News Talk Radio.
I do a lot of streaming radio.
I do a lot of free streaming.
TNTRadio.live.
Welcome back to the Johnny Vedmore Show on today's News Talk TNT. Just waiting for our first guest to hopefully come in and just having a little look at the chat and seeing what people are saying. And they're talking about the smoking ban at course, little cow says, I must go and burn some rubbish in the garden later so I can breathe in some smoke. And of course, lots of people talking about the fact that the black market will, of course, become extremely healthy afterwards. Well, healthier than the lungs of people who are using that black market. First they came for the smokers, then the meat eaters, and then finally the alcohol. Operation Creep says, Penelope Pit Stops Ghosts, I feel you there. And Lorianne says, so they can cut off your beep, just don't smoke. Yes, and pump you full of their jabs too. I mean, we're seeing such an amazing amount of overreach happening these days because society is changing. And there's not many people around who can actually stop that change. And that's why we're seeing more and more people lean towards candidates that are not officially part of the establishment or don't look like they're part of the establishment. So we all know why Trump appeared down those escalators back in 2000 and what was it, 16 that he, or was it 15 when he started his campaign? But still, we all know why he turned up then, because he's a very important figure in being the anti-establishment figure. Whether or not he was placed that way or whether or not he's really an anti-establishment figure, it was very strange how a few of those figures came up just at the same time. So you had Viktor Orban being the anti-establishment figure, and you had Jeremy Corbyn at the same time come up as an anti-establishment figure. And I was very surprised and very suspicious by these anti-establishment figures, but I wanted to support them regardless because I don't want the establishment to continue being able to ban everything and being able to continue creating this dystopian society that we see all around us all of the time. Now, just to note, when I was talking about Corbyn there, and the situation in Britain, what I found even more peculiar was when Corbyn was first elected, he was elected by the members, by Labour members, the people who were high up in the party. The rules were slightly different, but basically the nominations for those who would be potentially leader of the Labour Party, the people who voted for Corbyn to be a potential leader, and then he went up to leader, were all the establishment. And the establishment actually surrounded him all of the time throughout the entirety of Corbyn's reign. So those who live in Britain know that maybe there's was one or two people around Corbyn who you could say, oh, you could trust. Maybe Shami Chakrabarty, World Economic Forum young global leader. Or maybe it was, well, there wasn't many of us, was there? There was only one or two who actually aligned with Corbyn. Nearly the entire Labour Party establishment, even the ones who had originally put him forward as a nomination for leadership, were part of the smear campaign. And it seemed like that establishment needed a figure that they could pillory, that they could hit and abuse. And I feel the same happened with Trump. And if you look at how the situation with Trump has gone ever since then, we've come to a point where he's basically been beaten with every stick you can possibly beat him with. And we're going to see more of that. So, Ruckus, you're still with us, aren't you? You can tell us a little bit more about some stuff that's going on with Trump at the moment, I believe.
Yeah, we got a little bit of breaking news today in this the hush money, the Stormy Daniels thing. We've been doing this jury selection process, which has been going a little slow. Like when they, like for instance, as the Guardian reported it a little while ago, there was the first group of 96 prospective jurors, when asked by the judge whether any of them thought themselves incapable of being fair and impartial, more than 50 of them raised their hands. So they're finding it very tricky, very difficult to find anybody in this day and age who doesn't have a sort of a quote unquote opinion on the matter. Therefore, they're, you know, great difficulty selecting jurors. I believe we have now officially found 9 of them. It was 7 before I came on air today, but I was scrolling through the news. It looks like officially we have picked 9. They will continue with this process on Thursday. Here's what was interesting. A bunch of the media, Fox, MSNBC, the mainstream people got to talk to at least one of these dismissed potential would-be jurors who gave some insight into the process. This is a young lady by the name of Kara McGee, who told media outlets outside the courtroom on Tuesday she was dismissed. She believes she could be impartial. She added that it would be, quote, very difficult for anyone really in this country to not come to this without prior opinions. She said, quote, we all have prior opinions on the dependent unless you've been living in a cardboard box, end quote. Apparently, she was excused because of her job in the cybersecurity sector. She described it as being a very surreal thing. As far as the process goes, she said that one of the questions that were asked of the jurors, quote, one of which is, quote, she's explaining the question, do you have opinions about the ability for a former sitting president to be tried in a court of law? Which I think the way people answered that showed how they felt about the case. The other one was, do you have any opinions about legal limits for campaign finance donation amounts? Which I believe was another one that was kind of meant to gauge feelings about the particular case, end quote. So you kind of get the impression that it's going to, again, as I indicated, Johnny, be very, very hard to find somebody who's not got some sort of an opinion. Maybe they should be searching for those folks who are in a coma since 2015 and just recently woke up. They might be the only impartial, non-biased jurors that we're going to find, Johnny.
Again, I feel that the establishment figures all lurking around trying to find a way to bring him down. But it's just not going to happen. Well, thanks for that. We're going to go to a short news break and see you in the next hour, Ruckus. You're listening to today's news talk on TNT.
What a news day this is turning out to be.
Wait till you hear this.
Now, TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security is distributing $300 million to sanctuary cities to support services like shelter and food for illegal immigrants. Congress has issued a subpoena to Dr. David Morans, a top advisor to Dr. Anthony Fauci at the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, following revelations that he used his personal email for professional communications to evade transparency under the Freedom of Information Act.
Why not give TNT Radio a follow? We're on all major social platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time right here on today's News Talk.
TNT Radio.
TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Johnny Vedmore Show, my friends. Right, my first guest up today is someone who has a few bugs to bear here and there. He's not just a one-trick pony for sure, and I can't wait to get in another conversation, although we'll find ourselves agreeing on a lot and maybe having a little smoke once we're finished. Brian Lupo, who is also known as CanCon, is a business owner turned Marine combat veteran who has his toes dipped in both journalism and podcasting. Brian is a strong advocate for medical cannabis for combat veterans suffering from PTSD and other ailments. And he started podcasting after the death of George Floyd, promoting the idea of focusing on politicians rather than each other. A really good idea. He began creating short videos on issues affecting the local communities heavily impacted by the riots. Since then, he's worked with prominent figures in the movement of election integrity, COVID, and pushing back against the globalist tyranny. Since August of 2022, he's been writing for the Gateway Pundit and has broken stories about ballot harvesting in Tarrant County, Texas, poll pads, adding voters in Harris County, and the federalization efforts between the Department of Homeland Security and local election officers, and the system errors found in Georgia's county throughout 2020 and 2022. You can follow him on X at CanConActual, Can with two N's, of course, and watch him on Rumble, rumble.com/CanCon. Brian, how are you today? And do you have a certain strain of cannabis which you suggest for those who are suffering from PTSD?
I am doing very well.
And if you are suffering from PTSD, I would lean more towards an indica, maybe something like a Death Star type, an ironic name. My personal favorite strain overall, though, is a sativa that goes by the name of Green Crack.
No, wow, you're a sativa man. I would never have guessed that. I would have seen you the other way, all the way. I have to say, I am British. We are very proud of our Exodus cheese, UK cheese. So I tend to be a cheese lover. That's all I'll say on the subject. But you're clearly a warrior. So tell us a little bit about what woke you up in the first place.
Well, I always kind of considered myself to be awake, and then it just all came to fruition, believe it or not, with the election of Donald Trump and the message that he was putting out, where he's putting out kind of an anti-war message to the conservative masses, and they were eating it up. And I started thinking about it, and I served in Afghanistan a couple times. I was a combat veteran over there, Marine infantryman. And when I came home, I was all gung-ho, yeah, proud of what I did. And then I started thinking about it. I'm like, why are we even in this war? Like, what impact can Afghanistan have on the United States? Like, they're not going to come over here and invade the homeland or anything like that. And we're spending, billions and billions of dollars. And I think it ended up being about $2 trillion over there. And, meanwhile, we've got people over here that are just outright suffering. And it just didn't make sense to me.
Well, I think that obviously in the Tora Bora cave system, they scrawled with chalk the two towers and a little chalk plane going into them. So obviously they must be the most evil elite terrorists in the world. I think there's a lot to be said about the real reasons why we went into Afghanistan and Iraq especially, because that was just, off kilter, didn't make any sense. But I kind of like, I come from the same, when those wars first started, I was still within the mental paradigm that oh, this is a good thing, because still, whatever happens, they're bringing some form of freedom to an oppressed people. While you were serving, did you see that sort of oppression?
Not really. I mean, the area of operation that we were in was typically in the middle of nowhere. It wasn't a populated city. These people had electricity two nights a week, and only at night. Nothing else that they depended on was electronics based. They barely had cell phones. They had the old Nokias that we used to play Snake on 25 years ago, 30 years ago. I didn't see it. I mean, that's just me. I was walking through fields of opium, though, poppy everywhere. And, that was something that still to this day irks me, given the opioid epidemic we're facing right now in the United States. A lot of it came from over there. And, I think it was more likely that we were over there defending the poppy than defending freedom and our constitutional rights. And that's something that really grinds my gears to this day.
Yeah, quite a crazy reality, isn't it? When you're supposed to be from a country that is battling against narcotics, and if you take anything to do with that, then you're going to end up in jail. And at the same time, they're literally manufacturing the sort of, well, in a sense, they're part of every single stage of the process that leads it to becoming a so-called medicine. And I have to say, just in the defense of Snake could keep you, on for hours and hours. And one of those old Nokia phones, wow, their batteries lasted a long time. So I can imagine people could be a little bit distracted by that still. But you cover a range of topics, yeah? But I definitely like to start on legalization of medical marijuana. I take it cannabis became part of your own journey after witnessing the horrors of military combat.
Yeah, so I was I'm 40 years old now, and I was 30. I think I was like 31, maybe 32, the very first time in my entire life that I ever tried cannabis. And it's not that I was against it; it just didn't really appeal to me. And then, you know, coming home from war and all the stuff that we saw over there, you know, it was hard to sleep and you had, you know, anxiety and all sorts of issues. And my option was to go to the VA, our Veterans Affairs here in the United States, and go to the VA and get medical treatment. And medical treatment usually entailed some sort of cocktail of pharmaceutical pills. And, you know, I met a woman, you know, who had a son that was in the Marines, and he ended up overdosing on those pills. He had Klonopin and morphine mixed at the same time, which is like a no-go. And he ended up taking his own life. And I met her, and through her, I realized that I don't want to go the pharmaceutical route. And so just one night, out of pure chance, I was hanging out with a friend of mine, and he said, "Here, try this. I heard it's really good for PTSD. And I was like, okay. So I figure I'm 31, right? I'm on my own. I might as well try it. I've never done it in my life. It's never killed anybody. It's practically harmless, medical benefits. So I took a rip from his bong, and like immediately I felt good. I was laughing, I was joking, I was smiling, and I was like, you know what, I'm gonna try this again. And so now I'm at the point where, you know, smoke every night with my wife before we go to bed. We smoke, partake, whether it's edibles, smoking, whatever. So, sometimes throughout the day, I try not to do it so much throughout the day, but. You know, when I sit there and I look at all the pharmaceuticals and everything that they're stuffing into our bodies, these chemical concoctions and the billions and trillions of dollars they're making off of this, and I'm like, wait, you mean there's a plant that is completely non-toxic to our body? We actually have endocannabinoid receptors on every single organ in our body. We have more endocannabinoid receptors in our brain than any other receptor. And the fact that we're neglecting those cannabinoid receptors is insane to me. Like, this is a plant that was put on Earth, and there's clearly some sort of a relationship between our bodies and our anatomy and the plant, and we're completely bastardizing this plant. It made no sense to me. And so now, I mean, I'm a huge, huge advocate for cannabis.
Right. We're going to get onto a little bit more of that just after a short break. You're listening to Today's News Talk on TNT.
My name's Stacy. I'm 57, and I was adopted in 2020.
We were adopted in 2019.
And we were adopted in 2021.
We had a house, and it sounds crazy, but it wasn't a home. The one thing that Jake and Emma brought is it became a home.
When I met Dakota, he had just turned 14.
You weren't there for the first this and the first that. I missed the first words, but we got a lot of other firsts.
Watching her say, "Oh my God, I cannot believe I got my license." And she's like, "I passed." And I'm like, "Girl."
See them grow. It is.
They chose to love us. They didn't have to. They chose us. Family.
You and you.
Kids in the middle.
What I thought was a complete life was nowhere near complete. But it is now.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org.
Hi, I'm Susan Lucci. I never thought about heart disease until I had my own heart event. I had a 90% blockage in my main artery and a 75% blockage in the adjacent artery. I received two stents in my arteries. Stents developed through research funded by the American Heart Association. Those stents saved my life. Learn more about the American Heart Association's life-saving work at helpheart.org.
This is Johnny Vedmore on today's News Talk. TNT.
Well, on today's Johnny Vedmore show, I'm here at the moment with Brian Lupo. Listen, this is just like my favorite thing to talk about. And I don't talk about this often because, of course, I come from a place where you're not allowed to talk about the benefits of marijuana. It's still seen by most of the people who you'll talk about as being crazy. But what you were saying just before the break was we have a whole system that's there that's already seems to be evolved to take in cannabis. Do you think there was a time where our ancestors used it every day, all of the time, and that has somehow been taken out of our culture?
100%. I absolutely firmly believe, you know, the criminalization of marijuana is relatively new, especially in the United States, going back to the 30s. I think that it's been something. I mean, there's, and I'm not well educated on this, so you know, take this with a grain of salt, but I mean, they've traced cannabis all the way back to ancient China, you know, 10,000 years ago. This is something that I think was deliberately put on this planet. I think it's something that is causing a lot of the issues we have right now with mental instability and mental illness. Is look, and I'm not saying like every day you need to walk around and be stoned out of your gourd, but to go around and like what one thing people don't realize is the cannabis plant is so unique in that if you partake in the THC part, which is, you know, what gets you high, which, you know, has the psychoactive effects. If you ever feel like, and this is why it's so much better than alcohol. If you ever feel like you consume too much THC and you're too stoned, you just take a little CBD and it mellows you out. It like balances out. You can't do that with alcohol. If you're at a bar and you're too drunk, you can't be like, oh, well, let me just drink, you know, some Kool-Aid and that'll balance out the alcohol. It doesn't work that way. But cannabis does. And I think that, yeah, it's just something that we neglect.
To be honest, I think there's a lot of people who think they can drink their way sober. especially my granddad used to run pubs, rough pubs in Cardiff, and a lot of those people, they believed they could get themselves sober. I'm looking across at people in the chat, and we Fat Shug says cannabis has an effect on Big Pharma's bottom line. Otherwise, we'd be recognized for what it is, a gift from the creator. And I can't help but to agree with that sentiment exactly. And lots of people get extremely emotive about this, of course, because fans of weed are some of the biggest fans and the most the most solid fans you can get. But of course, we're talking about medical marijuana. What's it like for you where you are currently?
So I'm in Florida, and in Florida we have medical only, but it's pretty laid back in terms of getting it. Enforcement of possession is pretty laid back as well. You know, I think it's at the point now where if you poll the population, most people, they might not partake in it, but they're like, this isn't as bad as it's been made out to be. You know, the reefer madness of the 30s and 40s is all but gone now. Even in conservative movements, you know, CanCon stands for cannabis conservative. And somebody just gave me the nickname CanCon out of nowhere and it's stuck. But that's, you know, that was kind of one of my goals, is to kind of bridge the gap between conservatives, which traditionally Republicans and conservatives look at it as the devil's lettuce and all that stuff, and show that, you know, there is a spiritual side to it. You know, if you want to, it makes going out and just sitting in nature. And I know this sounds really hippie-ish, but what conservative now isn't hippie-ish, you know, our individual sovereignty and, you know, that kind of thing. That's kind of where I got started with all this. And I think it's really important that people understand our individual liberties. And when you look at alcohol, which is still legal in just about everywhere, the differences between, like, if you were walking down the street, would you rather run into somebody that's stoned or somebody that's drunk? Like, which one do you think is going to be a more negative interaction?
Yeah, completely. I have come across this in reality, because of course, a lot of the kids, and I set up to talk about this a little bit in the next hour as well, that a lot of the kids in the area that I'm in are completely and utterly, the police use cannabis and their use of cannabis as a way to target them for other things. So cannabis becomes a tool that can be used as a baton by the police. And it's very easy to use, because so many people who don't believe authority should be so dystopian use it. To change subjects a little bit, you're writing now and you're a journalist. When did you realize that you were a closeted journalist?
So the podcasting, I started with the podcasting first, you know, back in mid 2020. And from there, you know, as I'm doing more and more research, I started to write my thoughts down. And then one day I wrote this article, Uncovered DC actually published it. Gateway Pundit picked it up. Several other outlets picked it up. And it was talking about the voter rolls in America and the issues that we had in the 2020 election with the Zuckerbucks, and specifically how that money was being used to basically prop up NGOs and nonprofits that were getting access to the voter rolls in ways that didn't really make sense, like wasn't something that was safe. And from there, you know, I wrote that article and I was like, let me just write a couple more. So I started my own Substack. And then, you know, I started getting into the free speech and the censorship surrounding the Stanford Internet Group, which published the Long Fuse report, which bragged about censoring American citizens against the First Amendment and using public officials to do so. And so from there, I started writing articles about that. And then one day I got a phone call from Jim Hoff at Gateway Pundit. And he said, would you be interested in writing for us? And it's been a dream ever since then.
Isn't it so? Isn't it so to be able to actually write down and have things published so people can read them in a way that makes sense? Well, when you talk about Stanford there, do you see these different big universities in America as kind of focused in on different parts of dystopia or creating our dystopia? Do you understand what I mean by that?
They're full-blown Marxist over here. I mean, there really isn't any other, and it's cultural Marxism. When you look at how our universities over here are broken up, and we just had an article that got a lot of, not that I wrote, but Free Press published an article by Yuri Berliner, of NPR, talking about 87 Democrats on the newsroom floor at NPR compared to zero Republicans. And the balance is similar in the university system where, you know, across the university system, you have about 10-1 Democrat, progressive, leftist professors versus Republican, conservative, you know, constitutionalist, whatever you want to call it. And it gets worse when you start getting into certain fields like law, for example, I think is like closer to 16-1. History is up there. Psychology is up there. And so, you know, a lot of these fundamental occupations and professions that have the greatest influence on us without us necessarily realizing it are just completely full blown taken over by, you know, the cultural Marxism and the Frankfurt School type thought process, you know, going back to the 30s and the 40s. It's now seated itself deep in our institutions. And it's kind of scary. You know, we're getting away from trade schools and things where people can go out there and, you know, do the blue collar jobs, plumbers and pipe fitters and truck drivers. And these are jobs where you're making six figures. But instead, we push this college education, force it down people's throats, stack them up with federal debt, you know, to the point now where Joe Biden's using that as his campaign, you know, kind of trying to rally the quote unquote troops, the young college students around him by forgiving these student loans. I think that our colleges they're in a lot of trouble. They're in a lot of trouble. People are starting to wake up to what's going on in our universities.
I think there's a weird reverse that, you know, psychology that's happening in, I'm not sure if that's the right term, in the American universities. I've done, of course, a lot of work on studying Kissinger's international seminar, the rise of Klaus Schwab, the training of young global leaders back in the 50s and the 60s through a CIA-funded program, how that started, how the CIA, people like the Dulles brothers were instrumental in Yale and some of the conservative, Republican-leaning intelligence establishment, how they created these college campuses to be exactly the opposite of what they believe. Now, I that's also comes out in much of my work about CIA ideology, like with the start of the CIA, most of the people in the CIA were anti-Zionists, yet the CIA were instrumental in making Israel appear. So do you feel that it's like these psyops doing the opposite? Start off with youth so you're more likely to see them in universities?
Yeah, of course. It's generational from there because that youth ends up, you know, who was it, Stalin that said, give me the youth, give me a generation of your youth and I will control the future. Something along those lines. Of course, I'm butchering that quote off the top of my head. But yeah, absolutely. I think when you are able to gain the university system and indoctrinate the kids, you know, The old expression is when you're young, if you're a liberal, you have no heart. And when you're old, if you're not conservative, you have no brain. we're getting away from the brain part, and the indoctrination just continues on and on and on. And, you know, the media has a lot to do with that as well, as people continue to get older. It's pretty horrifying to see what's going on over here right now.
So that,
and over there too.
That's our, that's our university systems created so that the people in there aren't really educated, don't seem to have an inner monologue, and seem to be easy to control. And on the other hand, to control the adults, it's really the voting system. And that's another thing you've done a lot of work on. So can you explain what happened during the election in Georgia in 2020 and why it was important?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, that could be an hour long conversation or more. The 2020 election, we were told for so long here in America, most secure election ever. The mainstream media still to this day, they'll say false claims of widespread fraud and blah, blah, blah. I can tell you with about, well, I can tell you with 100% certainty, we don't know for sure who won the 2020 election. And I can say that in Georgia, 100%. I can say that in most of the swing states and a lot of other states, our entire system has gotten so corrupt, from the voter rolls to the machines themselves, to the processes, to the people that are allowed to influence the elections. Talking about Georgia specifically, leading up to the 2020 election, obviously we had COVID. And so the mass hysteria around, we got to get mail-in ballots out to every single person, was absurd on its face. You know, the fact that something that's 99 point whatever it is percent survivable, if you get it, which you have to take a test to make sure you know that you had it, it was just absurd. But in Fulton County, which is the largest county in Georgia by a lot, they had a COVID outbreak right before the 2020 election, like in the workup to it. And so they brought in the vendor who owned the machines, Dominion Voting, to conduct the logic and accuracy test, which is the public facing test that ensures that the machines are on the up and up and that everything is functioning properly. So they came in and did it instead of county officials. They've since passed a law in Georgia that outside vendors have to be American citizens, because the person running the elections in Fulton County on their behalf, Dominion's technician, was a Nigerian citizen, foreign national. He wasn't a U.S. citizen. He failed up. Well, I'm not going to say he failed, but he got promoted. He now works for Fulton County directly. There's just a lot of stuff. So we were given this, we were sold this idea of mass mail-in balloting. And they told us that, don't worry, we have, you know, checks and balances in place to make sure that everything is credible. And one of those was signature verification. Well, you know, President Trump and his allies, as they call it, they sued and sued and sued and tried to get any of this evidence into court. There were 92 cases that were brought. Of those 92 cases, 23 of them were heard on merits, and 32 of them were heard on merits. Trump won 23 of those. The rest were all dismissed on procedural grounds. So,
unbelievable. Listen, I'm not sure if you're going to be able to, but if you can stick with us so we can have a conversation in the second hour on this specifically, I would love that. So, I hope you can.
Sure,
we'll
sure.
See. Good. You're listening, of course, to the Johnny Vedmore Show, and we will be back after a short break. It's really interesting. This is a really interesting conversation, really important, and a pertinent thing to be speaking about, especially now coming up to election season. So stay tuned on the Johnny Vedmore Show. You're listening to Today's News Talk on TNT.